Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome into the Hard Count. Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. And guess what? The portal is still buzzing. You're not seeing the fireworks and the crazy big names jumping in there. But even with that being said, doesn't mean that your roster can't get better. Doesn't mean that your roster won't get better. In fact, I would argue the exact opposite. Jaden Rashada. Is there a chance he's on the move here to an SEC school? Remember, he was committed to Florida out of high school. That whole thing fell apart, goes to Arizona State, and now looks like Georgia could be in the mix for his services. Do we like that fit? We'll talk about the latest with him. We'll also talk about Jaden Rashada and him potentially ending up at Georgia if that is going to be the case and how we feel about that. Also, spring games. That happened this past Saturday. And shout out to y'all, man, that treated last Saturday just like a college football Saturday. Sat down on the couch. You knew we had close to double-digit spring games. We talked about six or seven of them on this show on Sunday morning. And you just kind of got into your rhythm, got a good little game day rep, and that's what this is all about, man. Making sure that we are taking advantage of our opportunities to bring our best when our best is required when it comes to the fall, much like some of those teams did during this past Saturday. We got some thoughts for you. We got thoughts on Texas. We got thoughts on Notre Dame. Some impressions from USC and what they did defensively. Still a work in progress, but progress nonetheless for the good folks out there in Los Angeles. So we'll talk about that. Also, I mentioned the spring games. Arch Manning just went absolutely berserk. And there was the way that it looked on the surface, which is Arch Manning is throwing touchdowns, and he's looking like he is kind of coming into his own as a college quarterback. But there's, I think, another layer to that as to what made it impressive to me. Like, we're going to kind of give you some X's and O's breakdown there and give an overall thought on Arch Manning and his spring game as a whole, a more encompassing view of Arch Manning going into his true sophomore season at Texas. Also, I don't know if y'all were keeping tabs on another spring game out there in Tallahassee, Florida, but DJ Uiagalelei made his debut in the turquoise uni nonetheless. How about Mike Norvell and the gang breaking out the turquoise unis for the non-contact folks out there? A lot of opinions on DJ Uiagalelei. Very few of them are indifferent opinions on what he's going to be in 2024. I got a feel on this, and excited to unpack that together. Because we talk about punchline culture a lot on this show. We do our best to not be a victim of it. Not saying it never happens, but we do our best to not be a victim of it. But we got some thoughts on DJU coming off that spring game, and also Cormani McClain, speaking of the transfer portal. We got some thoughts on his latest comments from his YouTube channel. So bottom line here, we're sitting here in April. And we're going to fill an hour-long show with exclusively college football talk. So if that kind of sounds like you're in that same frame of mind as us, as in college football season never stops, we're glad to have you all a part of this. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and on Twitter, at JD Pakel, to stay up with everything about going on right here. Let's waste no time, man. Let's get right to it. The transfer portal is continuing to buzz. What is the latest intel we have from the transfer portal? I would encourage you to make sure you are, of course, subscribed here, but make sure you're following Pete Nakos on Twitter. He's dropping all the intel, all the scoop all year long, especially this time of season. Also follow Steve Wiltfong, Hayes Fawcett, the On3 Twitter page, the On3 transfer portal Twitter page. I think that's all of them, just so we're all the way in the know. But we mentioned Jaden Rashada at the top of this live show. Georgia, it looks like right now, is the leader in the clubhouse. He's visiting there, I believe, as we speak. Auburn and Mississippi State are also entering into the fold for a Jaden Rashada sweepstakes. We'll talk more about him later in this live show. But the thing that I'm encouraged by, if I'm a Jaden Rashada supporter, is a couple of things. One, the fact that he is showing some, self-assessment, showing the self-evaluation, self-awareness to be able to say, listen, I played last year at Arizona State. I could stay there, compete for that job with the other transfer portal quarterback they brought in, Sam Leavitt, but I think I need to get better. I need to go somewhere where I can develop. And Georgia, the development mechanism they have there speaks for itself. But you talk about Mississippi State, you talk about Auburn. What do we know about both those head coaches running those shows over there? Jeff Lebby and Hugh Freeze, they specialize in quarterback play. They specialize in offensive football. So if he goes either places, Mississippi State, maybe he gets on the field sooner. He goes to Auburn, he's definitely sitting for a year. I love the fact that he is willing to take some time, understand that he's not where he wants to be just yet as a college quarterback, and sort of reassess his options when it comes to what he's going to be long term. So again, we'll talk more about him later in the show, but four-star cat out of 2023 class, wherever he ends up, he's going to make that quarterback room better. Mark my words. Another player out of 2023 class, Jaden Wayne. He's entering the portal. Edge defender from Miami, top 100 recruit in that 2023 class. I'm not sure about his market. I'm not sure, not because I am, you know, not thinking he's a good player. I just don't know what Jaden Wayne is perceived as when it comes to some teams in the transfer portal. Now, he had a ton of offers out of high school. I mean, you name it, he had it pretty much when he entered into that recruiting process. I'm always curious whenever these guys jump into the portal where their hometown is. Now, Jaden Wayne, he's from the state of Washington. A lot of schools are looking to add edge defenders. Curious if the Huskies are in play. I don't know that. I'm kind of throwing darts at a board there. But nonetheless, a high-profile recruit is in the portal. Someone's going to take him and get better. Speaking of defensive linemen, we've talked about Simeon Barrow on this show for a little bit. He is the bell of the ball right now when it comes to the transfer portal. He is the best defensive lineman available. From Michigan State, big body, LSU, Texas, Florida State, all in the running. He is, if you're using the Black Friday metaphor that I like to use when I talk about the transfer portal, he is that flat screen TV that everyone is fighting over in the parking lot. He is the one that everyone is after right now. And the fact that he is in the crosshairs for LSU is interesting to me because LSU now, he's currently visiting LSU or visited previously, most recently. LSU is kind of going through a reinvention of themselves defensively. You bring in Blake Baker. You bring in Bo Davis coaching the defensive line, who is one of the best in the game coaching the defensive line. LSU allowed 4.4 yards a carry last year. 4.4. You know how well below, not just the price of admission to win in the SEC long-term at the highest level, but the standard they have in Baton Rouge. LSU is usually the enforcer. They're the bully. So bringing in a guy like a Simeon Barrow after they lose Mason Smith, that would be a massive addition to that roster and to the depth that they want to create there on the defensive line. That would be huge. That would be huge because you got to be able to stop the run. It's a line of scrimmage conference. There's no way around it, so you got to have the big boys on the line of scrimmage to get that done. Stay on the line of scrimmage, man. Dominique Williams is a defensive lineman, defensive tackle from TCU. He is jumping into the portal right now, and Texas and Oklahoma are after his services. Big body, 6'2", 320 is what he's listed as. He's going to take his time with his process, but speaking to just Texas and Oklahoma with them looking like the leaders right now in his recruitment, remember, they both go into the SEC this year. I said it on a previous show, first impressions are everything. And not just for the conference, because I don't think anybody within the SEC is going to overlook a Texas or an Oklahoma when they have them on the schedule. But if you're a recruit and you're a high-profile player and you're picking between Texas, Oklahoma, and the rest of the SEC, if Oklahoma or Texas don't have a solid showing year one and they kind of get pushed around, what is that public perception from them for the recruits? How are they viewed? What does it look for them long-term, perspective-wise? Adding a guy like Dominique Williams helps ensure that you're going to have that physical edge. You're going to meet the price of admission in the SEC. I think if Oklahoma could land him, it would mean more to them, just for the record, even though they bring back a lot of production from last year's defense, a lot of good pieces. For Texas, you got to replace two All-Americans, but still, I think they are set up well for success regardless going into the SEC with how much they have offensively. If Oklahoma can add into that roster and make them more of a defensive-led football team more than they are already, and Jackson Arnold doesn't have to go out there and grow up quickly, he can kind of take his time, I think that'd be massive. So we'll keep an eye on that, but Texas and OU are after Dominique Williams. Penny Boone, a familiar name now because he was previously at Toledo, jumped into the portal in that first cycle during the winter, committed to Louisville. Now, this is a big-time player. Was, I believe, MAC Offensive Player of the Year. Ran for over 1,400 yards. He committed to Louisville. Currently, he is back in the portal, and he's the number 2 available back, according to the good folks here that run that for us at On3. Louisville, Georgia, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Miami, all in the sweepstakes. I'm curious where Ole Miss stands right now because they just got a commitment from Henry Parrish, the Miami back, who was previously at Ole Miss. He's back at Ole Miss. Miami, I think, is in good position to land Damian Martinez. We've said that a couple times on this show. I am fascinated to see what happens if Miami lands Damian Martinez and if Ole Miss is saying, hey, you know what, actually we're good. We already got our running back. I wouldn't be surprised if Penny Boone ended up back at Louisville. So keep an eye on that. I think that's a possibility, and that's also something that Pete Nakos is echoing that same sentiment. Houston wide receiver Sam Brown, he is in the portal. We've talked about him before. Explosive kind of playmaker, 13 yards a catch in 2023. We're hearing Miami is the school to watch, according to Pete Nakos. That would be huge for Miami because we've said that a couple times, man. They got to keep adding weapons for Cam Ward to maximize his potential. That's great. You brought in one of the best players, one of the best quarterbacks in the portal. There's no secret about it. Like, Cam Ward's going to elevate your offense. But how much of a shame would it be to bring in one of the best quarterbacks in the portal, to have a championship caliber kind of player at quarterback and not have the pieces to go with it? Right? It's like, I mean, it's like having a great outfit but not having the shoes to match, man. You got to have the shoes. You got to have the complete fit to compete how you want to compete in the ACC. Adding Sam Brown, I think, would be a massive step in the right direction to go with an Xavier Restrepo, to go with the true freshman JoJo Trader, Isaiah Horton, all those pieces. I think that would be massive. So keep an eye on that. If they're able to land Sam Brown, that would be big for Shannon Dawson in that offense. Colorado corner, Cormani McClain, we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. Three schools are entering the fray for him right now when you talk about his recruitment: UCF, USF, and Memphis. It's worth noting now, as of the most recent intel piece from Pete Nakos, there have been no visits scheduled yet for Cormani McClain. Cormani McClain, of course, this 2023 cycle was at Colorado after he was committed to Miami, and then he flips his commitment to Colorado and is a four-star player for us here at On3. And Memphis is making a strong push for him. They're allegedly in conversations about him playing wide receiver and corner for them this upcoming season. So we'll see if that sweetens the deal at all for him. I've said a couple times, I think the relationship aspect for him at USF with DVD over there was his primary recruiter at Miami. He's now the corners coach at USF. It's a relationship game. I know NIL is a big part of this thing for a lot of these high-profile players, but at the end of the day, if I'm Cormani McClain, get back to where you're comfortable, go back with someone that you're comfortable with, you're familiar with, and go play for a hometown team. Could be a good deal. So keep an eye on Cormani McClain. We'll have more on him later in the show. We talk a lot about best available on this show just because of the nature of the portal right now. It's kind of ebbing and flowing. Auburn is in the taking business right now. Auburn landed two defensive lineman commits. I believe they were both in the course of the last 48 hours. Phillip Bleedy, defensive lineman from Indiana, and Isaiah Rakes, defensive tackle, who was previously at A&M, jumped in the portal and transferred to USC, jumped back in the portal. Now he's headed to Auburn, man. That's massive for Auburn. I mean, if I were buying stock in college football programs, I'd probably spread my money around, diversify the portfolio, but I would put a healthy amount of my money on the Auburn Tigers. Hugh Freeze in that offense, I have a very, very difficult time believing they won't continue to develop and get better on that side of the football. But in the SEC, same thing we said about LSU is true about Auburn. You got to be able to have those big human beings to compete at the highest level. And in 2023, they allowed 4.5 yards a carry. That's good for 86th in the country. You bring in two big bodies. Isaiah Rakes is like 6'2", 315, 320. Phillip Bleedy, 6'3", right around 295, 300. Those are two guys that are going to help you at the very least eat up space, get a good push, and present some more depth for you on that side of the ball. So a lot moving and shaking right now in the portal. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you're following all those Twitter accounts I mentioned already on this channel before, on this segment before, to stay in the know for all things portal. There's a great intel piece already on theon3.com from Pete Nakos and from other personnel. So that's just an appetizer. And this thing is changing and shifting all the time. Make sure you're locked in there. They'll keep you in the know as much as possible. All right, we're moving right along here. We got some things we're learning this spring. Because we say it on this show quite a few times, like it's very difficult to make a diagnosis during the spring. I think you would be wise to not make definitive statements during the spring. But even with that being said, you can kind of gauge symptoms. You can gauge the way things are trending at specific schools, especially when you get to see them in a 11-on-11 capacity. And we got a couple of takeaways I want us to address together here from the spring game this past weekend. Let's start with the first game of the day. That was Michigan. It was exciting to see the national champs take the field again, 11-on-11. Sharon Moore era has begun in Ann Arbor. I will make this definitive statement. As I just said, don't make definitive statements. I will say this. There is no need for Michigan to go into the portal for a transfer quarterback. Alex Orji, 13 for 18 on the day. Davis Warren was 6 for 9, 2 touchdowns, 136 yards. Alex Orji ran for a touchdown. I think what you need to be at Michigan to be the starting quarterback there, for them to be successful, need to be efficient. Need to be efficient in both those individuals in that small sample size and from what we're hearing behind closed doors have been efficient to a certain degree. Alex Orji kind of taking some more strides, it sounds like, towards the latter half of this spring. Michigan, just overall, as a program, is going to always side on homemade over store-bought. Okay, we've seen that with how they promoted their head coach. Jim Harbaugh leaves for the NFL. We're going to go ahead and promote Sharon Moore. Strength coach goes with him. Okay, great. Promote internally. Next strength coach. And I think that's the same thing for how they're going to address this quarterback position. And Kirk Campbell said as much post-spring game. You could say, well, he's just saying that to keep guys there. I think he's saying that because he really means that. And there's a couple of pieces to this. One, I don't know there's a better option in the transfer portal to go after right now. And even if there were, you bring him in to Michigan, you have fall camp in the summer to win over that locker room, over a couple of guys, specifically Alex Orji and Davis Warren, and there's more quarterbacks in that factoring into this, I'd have to believe, but those are the two at the top. You give them a short window to try and win the team away from those guys. I have a hard time believing it. Not that it couldn't happen, but I don't think it's the most effective way forward. Because with Michigan, as I mentioned before, championship-level culture. It'd be different if Michigan was kind of in disarray and they had won 6 games last year and they were fighting to make a bowl game. Like, this is a strong, rock-solid culture. There's a real identity over there at Michigan. And so what I'm trying to say here is they're not, like, looking or wanting for leaders to lead them in the right direction. They have those in-house. And you bring in somebody else from the outside to play quarterback for you, I don't know that that would be a winning move. So we have more thoughts on that on another video on this channel, so make sure you check that out. The bottom line here is you don't need to be Pat Mahomes to be successful at Michigan. You need to be able to make your layups, get us in the right play, and not turn the ball over. I think Alex Orji is your best option for my money right now. I said that already. His legs add another element to the run game. Saw that a little bit in the spring game, even though he was non-contact. So we talked a lot about Michigan there, but bottom line, no portal quarterback needed for the Wolverines. Florida State, they had their spring game, spring showcase more or less. Their calling card from last year was the defensive line, in my opinion. As good as Jordan Travis was, as good as those skill players were, they were a physical football team. I think that calling card is still the calling card for them in 2023. Marvin Jones, the transfer from Georgia, former five-star, he was flying around in the spring game. I think he got a lot of folks excited about pairing him with the Patrick Payton, with the Josh Farmer when he ends up playing. He didn't play in the spring game. You talk a lot about Daryl Jackson and all that he's going to be. Like that line of scrimmage play for Florida State was really solid last year. You lose two guys to the NFL and Jared Verse and Braden Fisk that were dogs. I don't think you take a massive step back in 2024. And to kind of supplement what they have on the defensive side of the ball, they're going to be really physical on the offensive side of the ball too. That running back room, man, they are legitimately 3 or 4 players deep. I mean, Roydell Williams, the Bama transfer, nice touchdown run. Lawrence Toafili, didn't see much of him. You know what he brings to the table when he totes the rock. Keziah Holmes, nice touchdown run as well. He runs behind his pads. Like, they got some dudes now. And it's so important to have that physical edge that you can lean on throughout the course of a season. One, because it's going to be a long season for you, and that goes without saying. Everyone's having to deal with that. But to allow your quarterback, DJ Uiagalelei, to kind of ease into this thing a little bit, doesn't have to walk out there in the first month of the season and go bananas. Like, you want to see him play well, and he'll have to play well for them to be successful, but he doesn't need to put the team on his back for Florida State to accomplish their goals. He'll have to win some games for them, but he won't be out there doing it on his own. More on DJU later in this live show. USC and their defense, man, they're a headline across the country right now. It is what it is. But even with that being said, as much as that USC defense is a work in progress, there is some progress. There is some progress, and it's just a spring game. and you're breaking in new quarterbacks, and it's not Caleb Williams, and they're still getting up to speed, new scheme, all that, definitely true. It wasn't a perfect day, but from what I saw from that Dan Lynn defense at USC during the spring game, the most important thing for me was I saw guys just in better position to make plays. It sounds simple. We didn't see that a lot last year for USC. Like, there were multiple games where I'm watching Colorado just dice them up on what felt like fairly standard kind of football plays. Like, it wasn't like they were running this double reverse trick play. Like, they were just running inside zone, and they're gashing USC. Same thing with Arizona State. Situations where the personnel on the other side of the football shouldn't be able to gash USC the way that they did. I don't think it's going to happen in the same way as it did a season ago. Now, is USC, I think, still at a little bit of a disparity when it comes to the talent level they have on the defensive side of the football? Probably so. I think they're still acclimating to what they're going to be in the Big Ten. But being able to be in better position schematically changes the entire vantage point for what your personnel is. Like, I don't even think we got a great gauge for what USC's defensive personnel was last year because of the way that they were out of position so many times. And if you don't think I'm speaking facts here on how effectively schemed that spring game was, even though it was just a spring game, pretty vanilla, I have to believe, 4 interceptions. All right, the more position you're in to make plays, the better chance you have to make them. 4 interceptions, I think, speaks pretty loudly to the way that defense played. Wasn't perfect, but a good step in the right direction. Texas, their future is bright, man. Future is bright. The young talent on that roster performed in the spring game how you would hope they would. Jonte Cook looked good. Ryan Wingo looked awesome. He had 2 touchdowns, one of them being the quote-unquote game winner for that spring game. Arch Manning, we're going to talk more about later. He stole the whole show. The big thing for me here with Texas, Steve Sarkisian, as a recruiter, as a roster builder, is stocking the roster according to their goals. They want to win national championships at Texas. Pretty straightforward. They want to win the SEC. They're stocking the roster on the recruiting trail, on the 2s and 3s and so on and so forth, to be able to get that done going forward. Now, it's an ebb and flow. It's a constantly evolving kind of situation. You got pieces moving all the time. But even with that being said, with how often the transfer portal is going to impact your roster year in and year out, Texas is stocking the roster appropriately. Last team to get to here, Notre Dame. They were explosive in 2023, averaged 37 points a game, had a couple of showings where they were a little bit lackluster. I mean, the Clemson game comes to mind, Louisville game comes to mind, where they didn't really have that extra gear offensively. I saw that extra gear on display in the spring game. And Riley Leonard did not play for, you know, injury purposes, but you see the dynamic playmakers they have in South Bend, man. To me, it just looks different. It just looks different. There's not a better way to say it really than that. You just see guys that can be more home run threats for you. Jeremiah Love, man, I'll say this. I love watching that dude play football. I think he's a name that nationally flies under the radar just a little bit right now. He's going to have a massive season. And this offense with Mike Denbrock, they're going to move him around. They're going to make him a focal point for the offense. He looked awesome in that spring game, catching the ball out of the backfield. And when he gets the ball in space, it's usually not a one-man job to take him down. Like, usually he will make someone miss, fall forward, get extra yards. I love what he does. Like I said, carrying the football, catching the football. He's a home run hitter. He's going to be massive for them in 2024. On top of that, you got Jaden Greathouse, who's coming into his zone. Micah Gilbert, a young buck, had 2 touchdown catches on the day, stretching the field. Chris Mitchell, receiver they got through the portal. Overall, it's just a more dynamic setup offensively, and you didn't even have your starting quarterback playing in that game. Now, it's worth noting, the quarterbacks that did play in this football game, Kenny Minchie, CJ Carr, and Jelly, like, they got some dudes now on that roster that they have a high floor group, I would say, in that quarterback room. But the bottom line here, you see the pieces for Notre Dame to be explosive and even more dynamic offensively in 2024 under new OC Mike Denbrock. So those are the learnings. Take of them what you would like. It's not all-encompassing. It's not definitive. But it is, for us, how we feel coming out of those spring games. We always try to learn on this show, and the spring games were no exception. So we appreciate the spring and what it is, but we cannot wait for the fall. Cannot wait for the fall. I know y'all can't wait for the fall either. So just a quick call to action. Make sure you're subscribed to this channel. We talk about college football year-round. Long gone are the days where you have to wait for that College Football Live episode to pop up on ESPN once or twice a week. I mean, you got a variety of options to choose from to get your college football content year-round, and we're happy and grateful to be one of those options for you. So one of those things that makes college football a year-round sport right now is the transfer portal. There's no way around it. And Cormani McClain is one of those players that is in the transfer portal. And he went on his YouTube channel and has some things to say about his time at Colorado, tangentially, I suppose, and was asked a question about what he's looking for in his next school. Here's what
on my name, be a part of a real and a great program that's going to impact me at my best ability. And yeah, ready to get to a new place and get to work. Yeah, I feel like I just don't want to play for Clits. I actually want to be involved with a great leading program that's going to develop players.
So interesting. He said, I don't want to play for Clits, as he just said in that clip, saying he wants to go somewhere that's going to develop him. And I think this, obviously, because it's Cormani McClain, who's a high-profile player, because it's Colorado, who's a very visible brand in college football, with Deion Sanders running the show, like, this made a lot of people feel a lot of different ways. And you have, I think, two really extreme arguments on either side of this thing. The first is, well, hey, Cormani, we're hearing about you not going to meetings, not watching enough tape. We're hearing about you not doing the right things. So it's kind of on you, man. Like, you reap what you sow is probably what one side of this equation was saying. The other side were probably saying, yeah, of course Cormani wants to transfer. He's got Deion Sanders over there talking about Shadur and Shiloh and Travis, and that's pretty much all that we hear from him. I mean, Colorado went 4-8 last year. Of course Cormani wants to go somewhere where he can get developed a little bit more effectively. I think the right answer, as it usually is probably somewhere in the middle of the extremes. We've been very open on this show. Do I agree with everything that Deion Sanders does? No. At the exact same time, was Cormani McClain the sterling example of what a true freshman in college football should be doing to be successful? Also, probably not. I think the right answer is actually exactly what Deion Sanders said on a previous interview with the media. He was asked about Cormani McClain, and he basically was like, listen, it's unfortunate, but we are not the right program for him right now to allow him to be successful. I wish him the best. I think that was genuine. And to give you my thoughts on this, like, Deion Sanders saying they're not the right program for him right now, I think it's fair, because if you look at what Colorado is right now, it's like, hey, man, we're trying to get to a bowl game. We're trying to win a conference championship. We're trying to get this ship turned around from a one-win operation when I got here to winning football games. We don't have time for someone who's not going to be on board here. Like, the video you hear before you take off on an airplane, they always say, you know, secure your own oxygen mask in the case of an emergency before you do the someone next to you. That's what Colorado is right now, man. They're trying to put their own oxygen mask on right now. They don't have extra bandwidth to try and bring Cormani McClain along with them, no matter how talented he is. So I wish the best for Cormani McClain, especially if, you know, that's your guy for Deion Sanders, but you don't have the time to bring somebody along who's dragging their feet. And here's the thing with Colorado overall, which is just, quite frankly, I think a little bit frustrating. There is very little room for nuance when you talk about Colorado when it comes to the way people perceive Deion Sanders and the way people perceive Colorado. Like, it's either all of it or it's none of it when it comes to the negative and the positive. Like, maybe it's just somewhere in the middle. Like I just said with the Cormani McClain situation. People are saying, they suck. They won 4 games last year. They're never going to do anything there. It's like, well, they won 1 game the year before we got there. Maybe they're building. On the other side, you say, hey, if you don't think we're in a national championship, you don't believe. Why are you being a hater on Deion? Nobody's hating on Deion. Maybe it's just a matter of, hey, they won 4 games last year. I don't think they're going to the national championship this year. Maybe a bowl game would be a great place to start. Deion's going to attract everybody and anybody, man. Just wait. He's the best recruiter in the country. Okay, I think he could be, but he's got to do home visits, right? Like, that would be a helpful part of this equation to consider too. So I wish there was a little bit more nuance allowed when you talk about Deion Sanders, when you talk about this whole situation with Cormani McClain. I don't think it's a situation where, you know, Deion Sanders and Colorado are just a totally down-and-out operation. They just don't have the bandwidth to drag along Cormani McClain, who, by nature of what we heard from last season, wasn't necessarily doing everything he needed to do to push himself and Colorado in the right direction. And I think if you're going to pick a side here, I don't think you should pick sides, period, but if you had to lean towards a side here, like look at who is in the Cormani McClain sweepstakes right now. Not a lot of those high-profile schools that were after him at the high school level. So I'm just saying, I think Cormani McClain and the things you heard about him from Deion Sanders, I think those are probably about right based on the way his recruitment is trending right now. But we'll keep an eye on this and we'll see how it goes. We wish the best for Cormani McClain. We wish the best for Colorado and Deion Sanders. Like, it's a tough deal, man. There's usually some nuance that has to be involved when you talk about anything in life, and we wish there was a little bit more of it allowed publicly with Deion Sanders in Colorado. But nonetheless, the party rolls on. Speaking of nuance and not being allowed, man, there seems to be very little nuance allowed for this Arch Manning discussion. Because you saw Arch Manning walk out there in the spring game, go 19 for 25, over 300 yards, three touchdowns, like he looked awesome. And then the Twitter QBs got out the fingers again, and the Texas fan base started getting fired up again. And I just think it's best for us to have a discussion as to me, what made Arch Manning's spring game actually impressive. We'll talk about that right now. Really quickly, if you're watching this as a one-off video, it's from a show that we do live three times a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Also on podcast, if you like your podcast. Bottom line is make sure you're subscribed in some way, form, or fashion to this show, The Hard Count, on the On3 YouTube channel. So we appreciate y'all being dialed in with us. So what we saw on Twitter from Arch Manning was the highlights, right? Drops back there, 75-yard bomb for a touchdown. And right away, you had people come out and say, well, it was a busted coverage. Well, it wasn't actually that impressive. And I think the highlights were nice. And we'll talk about what those Twitter QBs had to say here in a second. What I think we saw in the spring game, and the reason why it was impressive to me, we saw the dividends of Arch Manning's redshirt year in 2023. Because compare that to the spring game from a season ago. And he was out there, looked a little bit like the game was too fast for him. He looked a little bit frantic in that first spring game. In this spring game, he stands in the pocket. I don't know the playbook, but it looked like he got from one progression to another pretty effectively, put the ball in the right place, then it put the ball in harm's way consistently. Like, he ran the offense. He took what the defense gave him. People talk about those deep touchdown passes, and we'll talk about them more here in a second, too, and break them down a little bit in greater depth. But I was most impressed by his two-minute drill to end the first half. Very calm, very collected, puts the ball in the right place, checks it down, doesn't try and make the big play when it's not there. They finish the drive and get a field goal to end the first half. I thought it was phenomenal. That, to me, was the most impressive thing that Arch Manning did that day. The deep throws were nice, but that was the most impressive thing to me. Now, let's talk about the deep throws, because that was something that drew a lot of heat on social media. Everyone saw the 75-yard bomb, and they saw the defender trailing like 4 yards behind him, and they say, okay, you're impressed with that? That's why you're crowning this dude? This is your king, essentially, is what they were saying. I can make that throw. And the folks that didn't go as far to say, I could make that throw, were a little bit more measured and would say, well, he's a college quarterback. He should be able to make that throw. I don't think that's an inaccurate statement to say that Arch Manning should be able to make some deep passes, but we're like dinging Arch Manning for hitting an open receiver downfield and saying it's a thing where the coverage was busted and like it was a fluke, like almost it was a fluky thing is kind of how it was perceived by some folks. Let's unpack that a little bit more. I heard that on Twitter and my first thought was like, yeah, maybe, like seeing the broadcast copy at first, guy looks out of position. It's a good throw, but yeah, that DB is trailing pretty far behind. After further review, I think this is also, just to be real, I think this is what the Steve Sarkisian offense does to defenses. Like, was the coverage busted to a degree? Yeah, but also I think when you look at that first touchdown, whatever that safety did, Arch Manning could have thrown a touchdown on. To break it down, what they had was a fly route, a seam route of sorts, and they had a post route right next to it. So what happened was, both of those moved towards the safety, and the safety went with the post, leaving that vertical route. Now, if the safety went with the vertical route, the post is wide open. Either choice that safety made, there would have been a big play, more than likely a touchdown pass, made by Arch Manning, and it would have looked like a busted coverage. People say, well, yeah, that's busted coverage, it's a spring game, whatever. Yeah, it was a spring game. Go look at the game against Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Adonai Mitchell running wide open, middle of the field. Was it a busted coverage? Yes, because Steve Sarkisian forced that busted coverage. He put that defense in a bind. They were able to make plays off of it. Same thing with that deep touchdown pass to Xavier Worthy. Like, you put your playmakers in position to succeed, and the quarterback puts the ball on them. That's good offensive football. Let's look at that third deep touchdown pass he had. The second was really impressive. You know, shifted up in the pocket, dropped it off to Jaden Blue. That was good pocket presence, but you didn't really hear a lot of the busted coverage kind of talk on Twitter. Let's talk about that third touchdown pass, which also got the, well, the coverage must have been busted, easy throw kind of label to it. You had man coverage. You had Isaiah Bond on the outside, I believe, running a, again, vertical route. He's going deep. You got an in-breaking route from the slot. Slot breaks in. Safety is in the middle of the field. You got one high, and he has the chance to either run with Isaiah Bond or try and jump that in route. From what I could tell, based on the broadcast copy, Arch Manning held that safety in the middle of the field. Isaiah Bond beat his man in press coverage on the outside, delivered a good ball, touchdown. So is it that the defense totally whiffed and had a horrible day at the office? Maybe. I think it's also very fair to say that Arch Manning is just running Steve Sarkisian's offense and putting the ball where it needs to go. So there's a lot to talk about this, and I understand that it's a spring game, so you try and tread lightly with exactly what you're taking away from this one. But here's why I was happy for Arch Manning. One, so much pressure is on this kid because his last name is Manning. And if he had had a pedestrian day, there would have been folks shouting at the top of their lungs, told you he was average, told you he was mid, told you he's his last name. And then you came out of this spring game, and people are saying, well, he's not the number one overall player in the country. Listen, we didn't have him as the number one player in the country here. We had him as the number three player in that 2023 cycle. We had him as the second best quarterback behind Nico Iamaleava. So I'm not telling you he's the greatest thing since sliced bread to touch a football, but I do think it's very fair for us now to have this conversation and say he's not a three-star. All right, just because the last name's Manning, nobody gave him a two-star bump because of that. And I'll say this again, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, they don't waste their time. They're not recruiting a quarterback that can't throw the football. They don't recruit players of that caliber typically to play quarterback for them. They both offered him a scholarship. They both wanted him to come play for their football team. Is there a quarterback controversy at Texas? No. It's Quinn Ewers' football team. He's going to be a third-year starter. He led you to a college football playoff last year. But Arch Manning is not a three-star. Arch Manning is trending towards being a really good college quarterback and will be a great option for them if they need to go to somebody else at some point during the season for injury or otherwise. I think that's a fair statement to make. So I understand the thought that, hey, guys are running wide open. Hey, is it just a spring game? I hear that. Guys are wide open, maybe because of the offense and Arch is executing. Is it a spring game? Yeah, but there was a lot of really strong opinions last year during the spring game when he didn't look so good. So just saying now, we want to shout about context this season and this spring game. Maybe the context of it was practice 15 for him a season ago and he was supposed to still be in high school also deserves a little bit of consideration. So that's how we feel about that. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the transfer portal because there's a lot of big names in there. We talked about that already on this live show. But Jaden Rashada is a four-star quarterback from the 2023 class who it sounds like there's a pretty strong buzz between him and Georgia. So what do we make of this? If you're just now tuning in to the Jaden Rashada saga or story or whatever you want to call it, let's kind of set the table here. Jaden Rashada, again, four-star quarterback, out of California, originally commits to Miami. Eventually flips that commitment. He's committed to Florida. Signs with Florida. And then he asks out of his letter of intent because of some NIL things not being not going through. Let's just say it that way. So honestly, the way that whole thing happened, man, when it all broke, we're just like, you feel for Jaden Rashada. Like, you feel for the kid because at that point in time, you're a senior in high school trying to sort out a very complex landscape that is NIL, and you are unfortunately the poster child at that point in time for things not going correctly in the NIL landscape. You're kind of a cautionary tale to folks to say, hey, make sure you know, do your due diligence. Hey, make sure that you're totally above board. It created a lot of conversation. A lot of them came back to Jaden Rashada and what he didn't do right or what didn't go right for him, which is unfortunate. Now he's in the portal after playing at Arizona State his first year, had some success at different points throughout the year, started a few games, decides he needs to hit the portal. and he's hitting the portal, and the narrative around him is he is going to go somewhere where he can develop and more than likely sit. Like Auburn's in the mix there. He would sit there. Mississippi State is in the mix. If he were to go there, maybe he competes for the starting job, but eventually sits. If he goes to Georgia, he will sit. And if I'm just a supporter of Jaden Rashada, man, I love that for him. I love the fact that he would be able to learn from a great OC in Mike Bobo and play with good skill players. But I think the thing that should be encouraging for all Jaden Rashada fans, period, is the amount of self-awareness and humility it takes to have played college football, to be a starter in a college football power conference game, and then to come away from that season and say, you know what, I'm not where I need to be. And keep in mind, this has been his identity for the entirety of his life. I promise you, everyone has always told him, hey, you're going to go to the league. Hey, you're going to do this. You're going to do that. And for him to say, you know what, no, I think I need to get a little bit better and develop, that shows maturity. That shows, like I just said, humility. And I think that in itself is probably one of the most encouraging, most green flag traits of a Jaden Rashada if I'm thinking about taking him in the transfer portal. Now, I love Georgia for a number of reasons. The best case, if you go to Georgia, is you get crucial development. Like I just said, you learn from a Mike Bobo, you sit behind a Carson Beck, you go out, you win the job, probably in large part because of your development and because of that year sitting, and then you are set up. You play with great weapons on your offense. You play with a great defense that has your back. You play in the SEC, which is the best filter, arguably, in all of football to run your tape through for NFL scouts. Set yourself really well for NFL prospects. Like, that is the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is you go there, you develop, you sit, and you don't play. And I don't mean to look too far down the road here, but I don't think it is irresponsible to assume that if Jaden Rashada, for whatever reason, isn't able to play, he could jump back in the portal. And here's the reason, again, this is the worst case, but I think it's overall a good thing. If you go to Georgia and don't play, if you go to Georgia, period, you know where you stack up. You never have to wonder, man, did I do everything in my power to put myself in position to develop and be successful? You don't have to wonder. You know where you stack up because that is the best in the country. Whether you're playing against somebody in that quarterback room, competing with them, or you're playing against future first-round NFL draft picks during practice running the scout team, like, you know, you have the best assessment possible for your skill level and for maybe how much further you need to go to get to where you want to be. And again, the best case is he goes out there, balls, wins the job at some point, and gets to get the keys to the offense after Carson Beck goes to the league. I don't think that's wild to think that could happen either. But overall, man, I would be very, very encouraged to see that happen for him. Going back to that portal thought, if he were to transfer again, Georgia is not a bad place to transfer from. You transfer from Georgia, you are operating from a position of power. Ask Brock Vandergriff. He grad transferred to Kentucky. I think he's going to have a lot of success once he gets time to spin the ball here in fall in the SEC. So, again, I'm not projecting he transfers again. Don't hear me incorrectly. What I'm saying is the worst-case scenario is you know where you stand and you're able to use that development and use those things you learn at Georgia for the betterment of your future. So Georgia would make a lot of sense. I'd love that for him. I'd love that for Georgia. It would make their quarterback room better. It would improve the way they would compete from a day-in and day-out perspective there as well. We'll see what happens. But again, Georgia, I believe he's visiting as we speak, and we'll keep tabs on it here moving forward on where Jaden Rashada ends up playing his college football next. So DJ Uiagalelei is at a new school as well. Started his career at Clemson, then went to Oregon State last year. You have Jonathan Smith go to Michigan State. So DJU says, okay, well, I guess I'm back on the market, goes to Florida State. And DJ Uiagalelei is very interesting because nobody that I have met in the college football world is indifferent on DJ Uiagalelei and what he's going to be at Florida State. You either think he's going to be successful and allow them to keep on being successful as a team, or you think that what he was at Clemson is about what he is, and we're never going to see him actually blossom into what he was billed as a five-star recruit at the high school level. So in the spring game, we saw him go 12 for 26. Saw some good things, in my opinion. I love that he was decisive. I don't think he was second-guessing himself in any of his decisions. You see the ability for him to move the ground or move the ball on the ground with his legs. He brings that element to the offense. some things that you didn't love so much was maybe you put the ball in jeopardy more than you would like. It's okay. It's a spring game. It's a jumping off point. We'll see what he is in the fall. Overall, the nice downfield throws as well for me, I thought were encouraging. So take that as you will. I would be very, very careful for us to make a negative projection on DJU and what he's going to be at Florida State. Because the thought is you're judging DJ Uiagalelei by his performance. And some of that's absolutely true. I mean, DJU being the quarterback, you're going to get praise and blame, whatever happens. But I think what we're really doing when we talk about DJU and his past failures, you're talking about his previous circumstances. Because if DJU has his best year he's ever had, what do you make of Florida State? Jordan Travis last year, I understand that he got hurt, didn't play the full season. He had 20 touchdowns passing, 2 interceptions, ran for 7 more, had a completion percentage of 63%. And that was good enough for Florida State to be undefeated until he got hurt. And ultimately, I believe, had he trended that way, would have been good enough for them to win the ACC, obviously, with him playing quarterback. DJ Uiagalelei, his best season at Clemson, 22 touchdowns passing, 7 interceptions, so 5 more than Jordan Travis had, completion percentage right about the same at 62%, and then he ran for 7 touchdowns. So pretty similar numbers, barring those turnovers. If DJ Uiagalelei, let's say he improves and has, again, his best year ever. Let's say he cuts that interception number down to, let's say he's right around 4 or 5 picks. Let's say he throws for, again, best year ever. So he's throwing for 6 more touchdowns, throws for 28 touchdowns, and let's say he runs for 5 touchdowns. How good is Florida State? If you're asking me, I think they're at least in the ACC title game, if not winning it. And a lot of people, I can already hear the comment section, JD, why are you talking about this? Why are you projecting him to have his best year ever? We know who he is. He's played a lot of college football. We know who he is at different spots. I thought we saw him improve as a decision maker at Oregon State. Different system he ran there, but still, I thought we saw him improve. Why can't DJU have his best year he's ever had in 2024? In fact, I would argue if context is king for quarterbacks, what you have around you is so crucial for your success, I think he has the best circumstances he's ever had in his college career. He's got the best play caller he's ever had. I would argue he has as good, if not the best amount of weapons he's ever had in that Florida State offense. He's got the most experience he's ever had playing college football. He's got a defense that's going to have his back that is, I think, as good as what he's had previously at different spots, if not better. Why can't DJU be successful? If it's all about the context for your quarterback, DJU is set up for the best context he's ever had. Now he has to progress. He has to be able to acclimate to the system and make good decisions. When we look at what's around him, he doesn't have to be Superman. He doesn't have to put the cape on every single Saturday for them to win ball games. Now there will be situations where he has to take over probably. There's going to be situations where he's got to make a play. On 3rd and 7, we're driving to win the ACC. Like, we got to have it, DJ. There's no way around that. But context is key, and the context around DJU, I think, is better than it's ever been before. And so for that reason, I'm high on DJU, man. I really am. The spring game is what it is. I'd be careful to put too much stock into that just because it is his 15th practice at Florida State or whatever they called it. For, maybe it was practice 14 for them. The bottom line is it's his first spring. With that being the case, allow for some margin for him to continue to get better because you heard good things behind closed doors out there in Tallahassee. So we're pretty open about it. We root for DJU. He has had a tumultuous road that he's had to go down throughout his college career. And I just love seeing guys where people are saying negative things about them and he's billed as this, he's billed as that. We think we know who he's going to be. And then I'd love for him to go out and just ball out in Tallahassee and have a phenomenal 2024 campaign and shut some folks up. Let those Twitter QBs know what's good. So we're going to keep on rolling here and get to y'all's questions here in just a matter of moments. Before we do, though, got good news for y'all. Y'all remember in the fall we were doing some work with the good folks at Roback? Well, we are Roback. And Roback is making sure that we are all set with the weather heating up a little bit. And we got some good news, man. Y'all know how much I love Roback. They're bringing you the hard count today. I wear them all the time for a reason. If you watch any of my stories on Instagram during our Friday question and answer period, I'm wearing a Roback hoodie. I'm wearing a Roback shirt. Maybe I was wearing a Roback hat at different points. I wear them all the time for a reason. They have the best polos on the market. If you need a polo to last you the entire day on a hot summer day or maybe a fall game day, Roback is your answer. Moisture-wicking technology and four-way stretch makes it easy to move in while keeping you feeling fresh. Robax Everyday Shorts are the perfect pairing as well. They're comfortable, have an elastic waistband, great and a great fabric that is made to stretch. So you're not walking around in like a cardboard polo or cardboard shorts. Like, they're taking care of you. Also, since we last talked, they've released a ton of new products. Between the most comfortable tees I've ever worn and bathing suits, Roback is ready for the warm weather. So Roback has also been proudly leading the NIL charge, having signed partnerships with college stars Jalen Milroe, Cade Klubnik, among others. They are becoming the go-to brand for college athletes. So this is important now. Use code JD on Roback.com for a generous 20% off for all new customers through the end of this week. That's important. Spelled R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com. That's 20% off all performance polos, shorts, and more with code JD. Roback, man. They're just good people. That's not even part of the ad read. There's good people. Worked with them for a long time. And I'll say this too. I wouldn't say all those things about them if it wasn't true. All right. They are for the people, by the people. So make sure you utilize that that discount code and get you some Roback here as we move into the hotter months of the year. All right, bringing on that man, Nick Brake, to walk us through the treacherous territory that is the Hard Count live chat. Nick, yep. What do you say? We got time for three of those. How are we living today, brother?
We're good. First one's from Jonathan Rayfield, our good friend from Nebraska. What's your thoughts on the Oklahoma spring game? Any standout players or plays that you saw? Also, what are you looking for in the Nebraska spring game, of course?
Ooh, Nebraska. Hey, Dylan Raiola now. You're tuned into Husker Online. There are some very exciting reports coming out of Lincoln about what he's doing. I can't wait to see him in the spring game. Definitely looking forward to that. Deion Burks is a Purdue transfer from Purdue, obviously over to Oklahoma. And, dude, he shined in that spring game. He had, like, a 175, 2 touchdowns. He is an absolute playmaker for them in every single sense of the word. It wasn't just the deep pass. It was also the horizontal game for him. Like, he got to work. He's going to be a weapon for them. And you pair him with an Andrew Anthony, with a Jaleel Farouk, like all the weapons that Nick Anderson, all the weapons they have in that wide receiver core means they can't just key on Deion Burks when they're playing opposing defenses. They're all going to eat. It's going to help Jackson Arnold. That was a big takeaway for me from that spring game. That receiving core is going to be dynamic, and Jackson Arnold, I think, is going to be able to utilize that and maximize his potential.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Ferris, could a two-quarterback system work at Michigan?
See, that's a good question. We talked about that a little bit in our segment yesterday that we do. So another reason to be subscribed, because we do this live show and we cut up the clips for you, make sure you got all your segments, but we also do some segments that don't make the live show, that we do different days during the week. I could see it. I really could. I'm not a fan of the two-quarterback system because I like having one leader. I like my quarterback to be able to get in rhythm throwing the football. It's tough to be subbed in and out and say, okay, Alex Orji, you got this drive. Davis Warren, you got the next drive. I could see the reason behind it because I thought Davis Warren, if we're calling a spade here, threw the ball the best out of that group. I like Alex Orji being on the field, though, at all times and letting him progress as a passer and keeping that threat for him to run the ball always present for the opposing defenses. So I like it. Don't love it.
Okay. We've got one from Living Rent Free in UT. That's a good price. No rent.
That is a good price.
With all the attrition that Michigan endured, in what world do they only lose one game?
Well, I guess if that happens, it means that unproven production was able to pick up where they left off last year, which isn't the wildest thing, because I saw some guys that maybe weren't stars last year, didn't really play a lot last year, that looked really good in that spring game, whether it be Zeke Berry. I think it's Fred Moore is his name. He had a big day. I want to make sure I don't call him the wrong name because they have a couple Morrises and Moores there. I think it's Fred Moore. He had a big day at the office playing receiver for them. They're going to go to the portal, definitely for wide receiver, maybe on the line of scrimmage as well. If they only lose one game, it's because whoever they have at quarterback blossomed and made that offense multidimensional and as potent as they were a season ago, or at least on par with that. Probably the better news if you're a Michigan fan, you don't have to lose only one game. If you lose two, I think you're still in the college football playoff. Now, they got their work cut out for them, but even with that being said, they could drop the game to Texas week 2. They could drop the game to Ohio State the last game of the season, and I think with a little bit of help probably, but feel relatively comfortable about still making that 12-team dance.
Okay. OG Gary reminding you to take a look at the new signings and commits in Utah.
I love it. You know what, OG Gary? I'll say this. I think I was incorrect in my assessment of what they needed through the portal. I told you, hey, I'd love to see some more weapons for Cam Rising. Upon further review, they've got a lot of weapons for him already. So I'll check out those signings. We'll get back to you. We'll talk some more Utah here in the future. But appreciate him bringing the Utah representation to the chat, Nick. How about that?
Yeah,
good absolutely. Stuff, man. Anything from you, Nick? Any big developments over the weekend for you?
No, nothing? Not for me. If we didn't get to your question, there's a lot of you. Come back tomorrow. We'll get to them.
We watched a movie over the weekend, correct?
I watched too many to even get to.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a spinoff show at some point. Yep. We'll get going. Good stuff. Nick, appreciate you, brother.
Yep.
Nick Brake making everything you see here happen. We appreciate y'all being dialed in. We're covering the portal like nobody else right here, not just on the On3 YouTube channel, but across all our platforms, our fan sites. All our reporters are crushing it, from Steve Wiltfong to Pete Nakos. Jesse Simonton's delivering heat-seeking columns, it feels like, every single day. So make sure you're dialed into all the platforms that we have here at On3, from our website to the Twitter pages. Bottom line, college football doesn't stop as a sport, and we don't stop covering it here. And we're very grateful for y'all to allow us to do what we do and for showing up and showing out every single day in the live chat, in the comment section, and having a good time. So rate and review if you're watching on podcast. We appreciate y'all for that. Listen, we love y'all. We appreciate y'all from the bottom of our hearts. And we are going to keep this party rolling. Back on the air tomorrow. We will see y'all next time.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.